सहना ववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Good. Welcome back. We'll continue our study. We're getting towards the end of chapter 2, and we have some very nice verses for today. We'll begin with some recitation, starting with verse 64. Repeat after me, please.
Raga dvesha vimuktaistu, raga dvesha vimuktaistu. Vishayanindrayascharan, Atma Vashyarvidhe, Prasadamadhigachati, Prasade Sarva Dukhanam, Hanirasyopajayate, Prasanna Chetaso Hyashu, Buddhif Paryavatishthate, Nasti buddhira yuktasya bhavana, na cha yuktasya, na cha bhavayata shantir, na cha bhavayata ashantasya kutah sukham, ashantasya kutah. Indriyanam hi charatam, Yanmano nu vidhiyate, Tarasya harati prajnam, Vayur navami vambhasi, Tasmad yasya mahabaho, Nigrahitani sarvashah, Indriyani indriyartebhyas, Tasya prajna pratishthita, Yanisha sarva bhutanam, Tasyam jagarti samyami, Yasyam jagrati bhutani, Sanisha pasyato mune, Apuryamanam hachalapratishtam, Samudramapah pravishanti yadvata, Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve, Sashantim apnoti na kamakami, Vihaya kamanya sarvan, Pumanscharati nispraha, Nirmamo nirahankaraha, Sashantimadhigachati, Esha Brahmi stiti partha, Nainam prapya vimuhyati, Brahma nirvanam ricchati.
And that is the last verse of the chapter. I think we'll probably finish the chapter next week. You know, we have some very important verses to see today. Before we return to the verses, let me first of all back up. We have a couple of very good questions related to our subject matter. We'll take the questions first. Swamiji, occasionally I find shanti when I help others. This is not strictly me looking inwardly. It is me looking at the suffering of others. Would this be considered looking in the wrong place for shanti? If you're helping others, performing seva, is that looking in the wrong place for shanti? We've discussed in many occasions, true source of shanti, of peace, of contentment and joy, of everything we seek, lies within. Obviously, if you look outside for it in something adharmic, like sadly, so many people look for shanti in a bottle of alcohol. And clearly, what they find is something that harms them, absolutely. On the other hand, we can find shanti in good things, like in performing seva. And one might argue then, well, that's very good. Absolutely, that's very good. However, if we're looking to find shanti through any activity, even through good activities, isn't there some attachment involved? Isn't there some, from a Vedantic standpoint, there's some misunderstanding taking place? And just to make that very clear, suppose you gain great satisfaction through doing some voluntary work. Wonderful, wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But then one day you're told, we've canceled that project, we don't need your help anymore. And then you feel very sad and depressed. Hey, wait a minute. Why should you be sad and depressed, deprived of this opportunity to do seva? It makes you wonder, for whose sake are you doing seva? This is something we have to come to terms with. When we do seva, absolutely we are helping others, and that is so important. But let's not ignore the fact that we may simultaneously help ourselves in the process, and that's something to be understood from a Vedantic perspective. The solution to the problem is obviously not to stop doing seva. That's not the solution. The solution is to be very alert to where we are getting attached to an activity, to where we are deriving our own contentment depending upon a particular activity or person. That's a problem. That's what we want to address. Next question. Suppose you don't know what is dharma in a particular situation. Is seeking truth the first step? In fact, I think we discussed that. If you're not sure about what is dharma in a situation, seek advice. And seek advice from someone who you believe can give you the proper advice. And some advice about seeking advice. Your best friend may or may not be the best source of advice. Sometimes people who are too close to us may not give us the kind of the tough love that we need. Especially family members may not give us the tough love that we sometimes need. So be a little careful about who you ask for advice. If it's a very complicated situation, you might want to go and find a what's called a disinterested party. How's that? Someone who's not involved in a situation who can be objective. Okay. And the last question. This is what we've talked about in the last two classes, how desire can lead us down that slippery slope, culminating in our destruction in the sense that we start doing the wrong things and we destroy our lives. And the question, I don't completely understand that if you have a desire, it will lead to destruction or ruin. That's not exactly what we said. It's not saying that you will necessarily end up in desire or ruin, but what it does do is it traces desire and ruin back to its roots. That is to say, it's the point of those verses is not to say that the moment you look at something attractive, remember our Lexus commercial? The moment you see the Lexus commercial, you are destined to rob a bank to afford that Lexus. That's certainly not the point. The point of the of those two verses, verses 62 and 63, was to demonstrate how adharmic behavior doesn't just come from nowhere. Adharmic behavior has a cause. And what those two verses do brilliantly is they trace the source of adharmic behavior back to the source. All right. Then we can now return to our verses. In the last class, we just saw, just want to return to this imagery, because it's a very lovely imagery we saw in verse 67, where, you know, we won't go back through the verse, but remember in verse 67, we talked about how we are sometimes buffeted about by our desires, by our wants, by our likes and dislikes. We're pulled in different directions. You all know what that feels like, especially those of you who are in a family. You know, spouse is pulling one direction, children are pulling in another direction, parents are pulling one direction, spouse's parents are pulling another direction. So you're being pulled in a lot of directions, being buffeted about. The metaphor is it's like being buffeted about by the winds, like a boat on the sea. Being buffeted about by the winds. And that's a pretty good metaphor for what we all experience in life. A lot of forces acting upon us, pulling us in different directions, pushing us in different directions, like the wind can push on a boat. But at the very end of the class, we ended with this. We ended, oddly enough, with a sailing lesson. Remember the sailing lesson? Where I demonstrated that if you are a skillful sailor, you can even sail your boat against the wind. But you have to do so intelligently. If you steer your boat directly into the wind, you'll actually go backwards. But if you steer your boat, remember we talked about tacking? If the wind is coming from north, if you steer your boat directly north, you will go backwards. But if you steer your boat a little bit to one side, you can go at an angle upwards, then you steer your boat at an angle the other way, then you go at an angle this way, then you go at an angle this way. Sailors call that tacking. So if you tack into the wind, you can even go contrary to the force of the wind. The message in life is this. Sailing requires some skill. If you get into a sailboat not knowing anything, good luck. Take some skill. In the same way, if we plunge into worldly activities without some forethought, without being skillful in our actions, we can end up in big, big trouble. On the other hand, the skillful sailor can even go contrary to the direction of the wind. A person who's skillful in life can handle the most difficult circumstances, no matter what is standing in your way, no matter what force is blowing you down like a hurricane. If you're skillful, you can handle it. And we can definitely find in the Bhagavad Gita plenty of teachings to make you skillful. Karma, Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam, we saw earlier in a chapter. Yoga, Karma Yoga, is Kaushalam, is skill, Karmasu, in action. Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam, skill in action, is one of the many aspects of Karma Yoga. So that's one of our main topics here at the end of chapter 2. We return, in fact, with the next verse, we conclude the current topic in chapter 2. The current topic in chapter 2 was the stitta prajna, the one whose wisdom was firm. And then the last several verses we talked about how even one that to be stitta prajna, you can't be blown about by anything. So you need to be skillful and resilient in a force in the face of all these forces acting on us. So at the next verse, verse 68, we conclude our discussion of the stitta prajna, the one whose wisdom is firm. Tasmad yasya mahabaho, tasmad yasya mahabaho, nigrahitani sarvashaha, nigrahitani indriyani indriyartebhyas, indriyani indriyart, tasya prajna pratishtita, tasya prajna pratishtita, tasya prajna pratishtita. Tasya prajna, his wisdom, his understanding, is pratishtita, firm, well-established. Well-established so that you can imagine a boat being blown off course is not one that's well-established. A boat that remains on course regardless of the direction of the wind. That's a challenge for all of us. What is our course in life? Our course in life is to follow dharma. That's a very simple way. And following, simple way of understanding our course in life. But course of dharma doesn't merely mean fulfilling your duties. We've had this discussion before. Let me just remind you, though, that dharma does not merely mean fulfilling your duties. Dharma includes spiritual growth. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, all four of these goals are considered proper and appropriate in life. Dharma, staying on that right path. Artha, accumulating enough wealth to take care of yourself and your family. Kama, enjoying the wonderful world Bhagavan has given us. And moksha, spiritual growth culminating in liberation. All four of these goals are to be pursued. To leave out any of the four is to not live a complete and full life. So one who is, if you are steering your boat through the currents of life, it's not merely following dharma. It's not merely not doing the wrong things. Sometimes we think that, oh, if I don't do anything wrong, if I don't commit any sins, then I'm okay. No. Following dharma is like the minimum requirement for life. It's not an adequate definition of life. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha, all four of these, chaturtha, purushartha, the four goals of life, all four are to be pursued. And one who is pratishtita, one who is firm, is one who can remain on that course, pursuing all four of these goals of life, no matter what. No matter what hurricanes and tornadoes and typhoons blow, whatever happens, whatever are the tragedies and disasters and challenges of life, we can stay on the right track. How will we be able to do that? It's not an ordinary thing. When you encounter tragedies, when there's a loss of life in a family, when you lose a job, lose a home, these are extraordinary challenges. In order to meet the extraordinary challenges of life without being thrown off, we all hit the challenges of life. The question is, are we flattened by the challenges of life? Are we blown off our feet by the challenges of life? Or do we learn to become resilient enough to handle the challenges of life? That's what's being described here. So stitta prajna, the one whose wisdom is firm, is one who has gained such resiliency that no matter how strong the winds of life blow, that person is never blown down. Now, that expression brings to mind a powerful, powerful metaphor. Many of you have already heard this. There's a difference between resiliency in the face of force, a difference between resiliency and rigidity. Sometimes we think that we have to be strong means we have to be rigid. Don't bend an inch. When you've made a commitment, you stay to that commitment 100%. Don't bend an inch. And then sometimes we'll point to, the great person, Bhishma, in Mahabharata, who didn't bend an inch. He made certain vows. I'll spare you the long, complicated story, but most of you know the story. He made certain vows as a young man so his father could get married. And later in life, those vows caused so much harm, but he was firm. He was rigid. He was absolute. And sometimes we say, that's what we should do. We should be firm. We should be rigid like Bhishma. Hey, if someone quotes the Mahabharata in that way, they haven't understood the story. Honestly. Because it was Bhishma's rigidity. In fact, we would say stubbornness. That led to a horrible war in which hundreds of thousands of people died. It could have been avoided if Bhishma would not have been mindlessly rigid. So the point we're leading up to is the difference between rigidity and resiliency. Bhishma was rigid. He wouldn't bend an inch no matter what. That caused problems. That's not resiliency, that's rigidity. The metaphor that you've heard many times is that of a tree. If a tree in a storm, if that tree doesn't bend. Big storm. In fact, here in New Jersey, big storms come through. And sometimes you see a big tree that doesn't bend when the wind comes. What happens to that tree? Crack. It comes down. Only that tree comes down. If you look around, there are hundreds of other trees that didn't come down. Why did they remain up? Because they bent. That's resiliency. The tree that doesn't bend snaps. The resilient tree is the one that gives with the wind, the one that bends. What a wonderful model for life. The way to handle the tragedies and the struggles and challenges in our life is not to be rigid, but to be resilient, which means give and take. In life, whatever is required, just like that sailor. You know, just to finish up with going back to our sailboat analogy one last time, the rigid sailor is one who says, I want to go north. Wind is coming from the north. The sailor who's rigid says, I want to go north no matter what. And that sailor sails directly into the wind and, in fact, doesn't go anywhere but backwards. So the rigid sailor gets stuck. The resilient sailor is the one who gives. Well, if I can't go exactly north, let me go over here. And then let me go over here. Then let me go over here. This is an intelligent person's life. An intelligent person is resilient, which means we're prepared to make compromises. We're prepared to give up some of our dear things. We're prepared to let go when it becomes necessary for the sake of living an appropriate life. This is resiliency. So we're talking then about the sthita prajna. Tasya prajna pratishtita. His wisdom is firm. How did he become that way? Well, this verse concludes this whole section where Sri Krishna tells Arjuna, Tasmat Mahabaho, O Mahabaho, O mighty armed Arjuna. By the way, in some commentaries, they actually describe mighty armed as Ajanu Bahuhu, one whose arms come down to your knees. Think about that. If my arms stretched down to my knees, what would I look like? I would look like our ape friends. Anyway, that's the expression, Mahabahu, mighty armed Arjuna. Tasmat, therefore, O mighty armed Arjuna. Yasya, one for whom? Go down to the third line. Indriyani, senses. Sight, hearing, taste, touch, smell. These senses are nigrahitani, controlled, withdrawn. No, controlled, nigrahita, controlled, under your control. Sarvashaha, in all directions, which means in no matter what direction the winds are coming, we can cope with that. So here the expression is when your indriyas, when your five senses are nigrahita, controlled, controlled with regard to temptations. That's our topic. Temptations, which are sarvashaha. In every direction you look, there are temptations. You know, that's so obvious when you watch little children, how easily they get distracted. Anything that they see or hear can cause a distraction for a little child. Well, adults can also get distracted. So sarvashaha, from whatever direction there is a temptation or a distraction, yasya, one for whom indriyani, the senses, are nigrahitani, are controlled, indriyartebhyaha, are controlled and prevented from just chasing after the indriya artha, the objects of the senses, the goodies. So just being self-controlled in all situations. And that really is a very simple message. Tasmat, therefore, Arjuna, yasya, one whose senses are completely controlled under all circumstances, a person who is not dragged about by whatever tempts them, they're not dragged about, tasya prajna pratishtita, such a person's wisdom is firm. This sounds like such an ordinary message. Be self-controlled, be disciplined, don't go chasing after all the temptations out there in life. It sounds like such a simple message to conclude this very profound section of teachings with, but it's a very simple message, but it's not a very easy one to follow, is it? It's easy to say we should be disciplined and we should avoid chasing after things that we know are not good for us. And yet, to go back to the metaphor we gave several classes ago, when that dessert is on the table, what was it? Was it rasagula? I forget, or something like that. Whatever is your favorite sweet. So if that favorite sweet is sitting on a table, your doctor has already told you lose weight. Doctor has told you cholesterol is too high, too much sugar, too much this, that. And yet, somehow, the rasagula disappears. And it disappears not because someone removed it from the table. It disappears inside your own mouth. We know better, and yet we lack that discipline. Which means tasya prajna na pratishtita. If we can't even stand up to rasagula, what hope do we have standing up against the real challenges of life? Seriously. So a good sadhaka, a spiritual aspirant, will use the rasagula as an opportunity to build the muscles of self-discipline. And just a quick comment here. We often justify, oh, it's just a couple of rasagula, it doesn't make any difference. That's our usual excuse, right? Come on, just eat little things. Not a big deal. In fact, that's true. It's not a big deal at all, even if you're on a diet, etc., etc. It's not that big a deal to eat those two rasagula. What is a big deal is you have an opportunity to build self-discipline. Self-discipline, which is going to help you in so many avenues of life. That's the issue. The issue is not the rasagula. The issue is self-control. And so that's why Sri Krishna ends this discussion with this particular verse, tasya prajna pratishtita, such is the nature of one whose wisdom is firm. Now, we go to the last part of the chapter. Some concluding verses. Notice that chapter 2, 72 verses long, is the longest or second longest chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. So a lot of different subject matters, and so we finished the subject matter of Sthita Prajna, and now we come to a series of four concluding verses. And the next two verses are some of the most poetic and profound verses in the entire text. There are many profound verses that are not terribly poetic. There are some poetic verses that are not terribly profound. The next two verses are both. They're very poetic and very, and also certainly profound, especially the next one, verse 61. Yanisha sarva bhutanam, Yanisha sarva bhut, Tasyam jagarti samyami, Tasyam jagarti, Yasyam jagrati bhutani, Yasyam jagrati bhut, Sanisha pashyato munehi, Sanisha pashyato. If you just literally translate this verse, it sounds strange. It sounds very esoteric and mystical. Yanisha, that which is night. Sarva bhutanam, for all creatures. That which is night for all creatures. Tasyam, in that condition, in that night time. Jagarti samyami. Samyami, one who is self-controlled. Going back to the prior verse, one who's enlightened, one who is sthita prajna, one whose wisdom is firm, that samyami, that self-controlled, enlightened person, jagarti, is awake, tasyam, in that which is night for all creatures, the enlightened person is awake, and the second half, yasyam, that in which jagarti bhutani, that in which all other creatures are awake, sa nisha, that is night, pashyataha munehe, for a muni, for an enlightened person, who pashyataha, who sees properly, who is enlightened. So to paraphrase the whole verse very simply, that which is night for all beings, in that which is night, actually this is not a paraphrase, this is literal. In that which is night for all beings, the enlightened person is awake. And in that in which all creatures are awake, that is night for an enlightened person. Ooh, sounds very mystical. Except, consider this, if we just leave it at that, oh, that's very poetic, it's very lofty, it's very mystical, but what does it mean? We should understand what it means. After all, this is called upadesha. Upadesha means teaching. If we find it very mystical, but if we don't understand it, then we've missed the point. The point is, Sri Krishna is teaching Arjuna through this passage. There's something being taught. We better understand what is being taught here. And what's being taught is actually quite profound. So let's see it in a little bit more detail. Yanisha, that which is night for all beings. What do you think this idea of nisha, ratri, night, what do you think darkness represents? This is one of the fundamental aspects of symbolism in this tradition. Darkness or night represents ignorance. Therefore, daytime or light would represent knowledge. And here, just to share with you some of Sri Shankaracharya's explanation, avidyayaha cha vidya virodhat. He says, The basis for this metaphor is just as ignorance is opposed to knowledge, in the same way, or the metaphor here is that night is opposed to day, darkness is opposed to light. In the same way that darkness is opposed to light, in the same way ignorance is opposed to knowledge. Ignorance is opposed to knowledge, then he further explains. Nisha Ratrihi Sarva Padarthanam Aviveka Kari. This is what is it significant about night? Is that in the darkness of night, Aviveka Kari, the darkness prevents you from discerning one thing from another. Now, you've all had the experience of stumbling around in a room in the darkness. Maybe in the middle of the night, you're trying to go from one room to the other, and you don't want to turn the lights on because that'll blind you and then disturb your sleep, so you leave all the lights on. You're stumbling around in a room, and you walk into a piece of furniture. You stumble into a piece of furniture. Why would that happen? You can't discern the piece of furniture from the absence of a piece of furniture. That's what Sri Shankaracharya is saying. Sarva padarthanam aviveka kari. Darkness prevents you from seeing what is what. Ignorance prevents you from knowing what is what. It's non-recognition. Something that's absolutely unique about the teachings of Vedanta is they show how ignorance, the failure to understand what is what, ignorance is a source of all suffering. Source of all suffering. You've heard in this class many times, non-recognition of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma is the underlying reason for all of our worldly suffering. Shankaracharya and others like to quote a famous metaphor of the rope snake. You're walking down the dark alley, and in the darkness you see a snake laying across your path, and you feel tremendous fear. Of course, as you know already, there's no snake. There's only a piece of rope laying across your path. But due to the darkness of the alley, you can't see the rope. Therefore, you imagine there's a snake. And the point of the story is the snake causes great fear. Ironically, suppose you had a pre-existing heart condition, and you're walking down that alley, you see the snake, you drop dead from a heart attack caused by an imaginary snake, killed by ignorance. Can you imagine the coroner's report? Cause of death, ignorance. Secondary cause of death, pre-existing coronary artery disease. Primary cause of death, ignorance. Yeah, that's at least if the coroner was a Vedantin. That's what they'd write. This is the wisdom of the rishis. Our failure to understand. Let's use slightly different language now. Our failure to understand the true source of contentment leads to all suffering. By the way, you know that I'm very careful when I use the word all. It applies here. Failure to recognize the true source of contentment being your own true nature as Satchit-Ananda, that failure to recognize your own truth, self-non-recognition, as my guru likes to say, is the cause for all suffering. Why? Failing to recognize the true source of contentment within leads us to start looking for contentment everywhere else, and everywhere else means in places where it doesn't exist. We condemn ourselves to a life of futile searching when we fail to recognize the true source of contentment within. This is our famous 10th man story. I don't want to tell the whole story now. Almost all of you know it. The story in which the boy doesn't recognize he's the missing boy, and he goes looking all over the place looking for himself. Or to use a very simple modern metaphor, have you ever looked for your glasses? Where are my glasses? Where are my glasses? Or your keys, same kind of thing. Where are my glasses? We can look in all the wrong places. And as long as we're looking in all the wrong places, we doom ourselves to frustration, to suffering. If only we were to look in the right place. If only we were to look in the right place for contentment, peace, joy, love. We're already blessed with that contentment, peace, joy, and love. Your true nature is already Satchidananda Atma. But Sarva Bhutanam, for all creatures who are Ya Nisha, who are there in the darkness of ignorance, all creatures will then be running around in darkness. But Tasyam, in that condition, Jagarati Samyami, Samyami, the self-controlled, enlightened person, Jagarati, is awake to the fact that the true source of contentment is within. And being awake to the true source of contentment within, the wise person is free from the suffering caused by running around. That suffering is better described in the second part. Yasyam. Yeah, nicely. It's described in the second part. Yasyam, in that in which Jagarati Bhutani, in that which all creatures are awake, Sa Nisha, that is night, Pashyato Munehe, for a Muni, for an enlightened person, who is Pashyataha, who is discerning, who can see truth, truly what's going on. It's night, there's something, not a pun, but a little irony in that last line. Sa Nisha, Pashyataha Munehe, that is night, for an enlightened person who can see. If it's night, you can't see. In the darkness, you can't see anything. But it says here, the enlightened person sees that it's night. What? The enlightened person sees that he can't see. It's a metaphor. This is poetry. And you know that poetry, we really have to work out to get the meaning. I don't know your experience with poetry, but for me, most poems, if I read the poem the first time, my feeling is, what? I read the poem a second time, huh? But after 3, 4, or 5 readings, slowly the meaning of that poem becomes clear. And this is a very poetic verse, so just the first reading may not give us the full understanding. We have to spend a little time with some of these verses, especially the more poetic verses. The Pashyataha Munehe, for an enlightened person, the enlightened person sees worldly pursuits as being night. Before I explain that further, let me share with you how Sri Shankaracharya explains it. Yeah, very nicely. He says, Prag Vidya Utpattehe, before the dawn of knowledge, before gaining knowledge, oh, this is nice. Some of Sri Shankaracharya's expressions are just so amazingly clear. Before the dawn of knowledge, avidya pramanam buddhya. Before the dawn of knowledge, you take your ignorant understanding as being true, as being pramanam, as being a correct indication of what is right. Before gaining knowledge, you take your own ignorant notions as being true. Specifically, well, the person, going back to the alley, the person took the snake as being true. And with regard to our day-to-day lives, the ignorant person is the one who says, ice cream really is a source of happiness. or rasagula, really is a source of happiness. Ignoring the fact that when you eat the ice cream, you become happy, but the source of the happiness is not the ice cream. The source, it comes from within. You eat the rasagula, the happiness comes from within. But being ignorant about that fact, you take your own ignorance as being statements of truth, so then you conclude that rasagula is the source of happiness, and if two rasagula will make you a little bit happy, more rasagula will make you more happy, and other experiences in life will make you happy. This is Sri Shankaracharya's point. Before the dawn of knowledge, to go back to his exact words, before the dawn of knowledge, you take your ignorant notions as being true. Specifically, you take, due to ignorance, you conclude that the source of happiness is out there somewhere. Therefore, we commit ourselves to a life of looking and searching and struggling to gain that happiness. But as we've noted before, that search is misdirected because the true source is within. So just like if I'm looking all over the house for my missing glasses, it'll be a fruitless and frustrating search. In the same way, if I have ignorantly concluded that the true source of happiness is out there in the world someplace, if I work hard enough, if I take the right kinds of vacations, and if I do all the right kinds of things in life, then I can find happiness. It's that same ignorant-based notion. It's only going to lead to frustration and worse. So Sri Shankara concludes then, grihyamana kriya karaka phala bheda rupa sati sarva karma hetu tvam pratipadyate. He says sarva karma hetu tvam pratipadyate. This becomes the root cause for all of our action. What is the root cause for all of our action? Seeking, I'll paraphrase Sri Shankara here, seeking all the goodies in life becomes the motivation for all behavior. But seeking all the goodies in life, when we seeking in all the wrong places, when we could be seeking in the true place, you can see the utter difference between one seeking based on ignorance and one who knows due to knowledge. It's a difference, as the American expression says, it's a difference between night and day. That's exactly the metaphor here. So that which is night for all beings, that to which all beings are clueless about the true source of contentment and peace within, tasyam jagarati samyami, the enlightened person is fully awake to that reality, the reality that the true source of contentment and peace lies within. And on the other hand, yasyam jagarati bhutani, that which is daytime for all beings, that in which all other unenlightened beings are fully engaged, that is night for an enlightened person, because night for an enlightened person means the enlightened person knows with absolute certainty that nothing out there in the world will lead to lasting contentment. Out there in the world, we can find lots of moments of happiness. While you're eating the rasagula, you get about 30 seconds of happiness out of that, eating rasagula. Then the rasagula are over. Then what? Then you want something you want something else. And then that's over. You want something else. Then that's over. Where will you find lasting fulfillment, contentment, peace? Lasting, not moments. Moments of contentment, fine. By the way, are you okay having moments of contentment? Is that what life is about? to be contented for a few moments, to have a few moments of happiness? Or do you want permanent, uninterrupted happiness? Let me share with you a funny story just that illustrates this point. I made up this story some time ago. It's a very peculiar story. Suppose I could give you a pill, and taking that pill, you would feel absolutely happy and content 364 days a year. All right? Would you take that pill? Yeah. If you could feel happy and content 364 days a year, who wouldn't take that pill? Because the average person's life is not so good that you feel so good on so many days of the year. So you take that pill, you're happy and content 364 days of the year. Suppose today is the 365th day. And you're absolutely miserable. You've had a series of 364 exquisite days prior to today, but today you're absolutely miserable. And I ask you, how are you doing today? What will you say? I'm absolutely miserable. And then I would ask, is that okay with you? In spite of the fact that you're okay for 364 days, are you content with being miserable on one day a year? Like, no, I feel terrible. I feel miserable. I want to feel good today also. Amazing. We want to be content, happy, and at peace every moment of every day without any interruption whatsoever. Tell me, do you think that's possible through your worldly activities? Absolutely not. How can we want something that's absolutely impossible? Maybe it's not absolutely impossible. Ya nisha sarva bhutanam. If you are in the darkness of ignorance, you will be committed. In the darkness of ignorance, you will try for uninterrupted contentment in life through worldly activities, and you will fail utterly at that attempt. And in the attempt, you'll make yourself miserable. By the way, when you're chasing after your glasses, is that fun? Do you enjoy it? It's a nuisance. Futile chasing after things is not fun. When we are in futility, chasing after happiness and contentment in life, it's not that much fun. On the other hand, yasya jagarti bhutani. No, on the other hand, tasyam jagarti samyami. On the other hand, an enlightened person is one who knows in the first person, I'll say for the enlightened person, who says, my happiness and contentment doesn't depend whatsoever on any worldly activity or condition. My contentment and peace is an already existent fact of my true self as Satchit Ananda Atma. This is the vision of the enlightened person. This is the daylight. This is the daylight in which you see it's just a rope. This is a daylight in which you see is just Rasagula. This is the daylight in which you see it's just a layoff notice. You see where this is going? It's just a rope, which means the rope doesn't threaten you. It's just Rasagula, which means the Rasagula are not necessary for your happiness. And it's just a layoff notice, meaning the loss of your job doesn't deprive you of the contentment, happiness, and joy you seek in life, because you've already been blessed with that source of that happiness and joy. This is an utterly different perspective of the enlightened person, as we said. The difference is one of day and night. What a lovely metaphoric verse, poetic verse. Yanasha sarvabhutanam, that which is night for all beings, tasya jagarti samyami, the enlightened ones are awake in that condition, awake to the reality of Satchidananda Atma being your true nature. Yasyam jagarti bhutani, but that in which all other beings are awake, which means in worldly activities. Sanisha pashyato munehe. Those worldly activities are like night to the enlightened person who knows that those. It's just a clip from that lamp, I think it fell. The enlightened person who is one who knows that worldly activities will never produce uninterrupted contentment. All right. Nice verse. And there's an equally nice one that follows. And it shifts the meter to the from the shorter Anushtubh Chandas to the longer Trishtubh Chandas, which has 11 syllables in a quarter. Apuryamanam achalapratishtam, apuryamanam achalapratisht, samudramapa pravishanti advata, samudramapa pravishanti tadvat kama hyam pravishanti sarve, tadvat kama hyam pravishanti. Sa shantim apnoti na kama kami, sa shantim apnoti na kama kami. Another beautiful, and this verse probably a little familiar to you. I've quoted this in different contexts earlier in our study of Bhagavad Gita. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram. Samudram, the sea. The sea into which apaha, waters, pravishanti, are entering. Apaha, pravishanti, waters are entering the sea. It's a reference to rivers entering the ocean. Apaha pravishanti samudram. Just like rivers enter the ocean. So think about the huge rivers spilling into the sea every hour, every minute. Rivers like the Ganga, like the Mississippi, like the Yangtze. All of these rivers emptying. Just, it's unimaginable how much water they spill into the ocean. Does the level of the ocean go up correspondingly? In your bathtub, you run the faucet, and you can see the level come up in your bathtub. These huge rivers, massive rivers, empty into the ocean. Does the level of the ocean come up? Apuryamanam, even though the ocean is apuryamana, constantly being filled. The ocean constantly being filled is achala pratishtam. Pratishtam, its level, is achala, unmoving, unchanging. The level of the ocean is utterly unchanging in spite of the fact that all of these huge rivers are simultaneously emptying into the ocean every moment of every day. So what? Tadvat, in the same way, kamaha yam pravishanti, kamaha, desires, or even objects of desire, we could translate. Objects of desire, sarve, all of them, yam pravishanti, enter a person. Now we have to explain this. Just like the rivers don't add to the fullness of the ocean. That's a nice way of putting it. Rivers don't add to the fullness of the ocean. The ocean is already full. The word in Sanskrit for full is purnam. Full. Purnam, full, complete, perfect. Mathematically, you would describe it as being infinite. The oceans are not technically infinite, but as a mathematical approximation, I don't want to sound too mathematical, but that's what the kind of language mathematicians use. As a mathematical approximation, the seas are infinite. Remember a little bit about your math class? If you add 1,000 to infinity, what happens? What is the sum? If you add infinity plus 1,000,000 equals? Infinity plus 1,000,000,000 equals? Infinity plus 100 to the 100th power. By the way, that number, 100 to the 100th power, is called one Google. That's where the word Google comes from. As 100 to the 100th power, which means or 10 to the 100th power. It's a 1 with 100 zeros after it. Infinity plus that number, 1 with 100 zeros after it. Infinity plus that equals infinity. Infinity doesn't, mathematically, infinity can't get larger because it's already infinite. Any number added to infinity doesn't get larger. Any number subtracted from infinity, infinity doesn't get smaller. Purnamadah, Purnamidam. If I chant this, you think it's the end of the class. I shouldn't chant that. We often chant that at the end of class. We have 10 minutes left. But that verse, that mantra from the Upanishad, talks about infinity. Purnam Adaha. That is infinite. That is vast. The infinity which is Brahman is vast, is infinite. Purnam Idam. This world is infinite. Purnat Purnam Udachyate. From the infinite Brahman, this infinite world came forth. Purnasya Purnamadaya. When this infinite world came forth from infinite Brahman, Purnam Eva Avashishyate, Brahman remained infinite. When the infinite world came forth from infinite Brahman, Brahman remained infinite. This is just to deal with this concept of boundarylessness, of infinity, infinitude. These are words that describe your true nature. Satchit Ananda. The word Ananda points to that limitlessness. Limitlessness. Ananda, don't translate Ananda as bliss. It's a horribly inadequate definition. Limitless, full, complete, perfect, vast. These are the words that are suggested. Now, let's see the meaning of this verse. Just like all the rivers, constantly empty vast quantities of water into the ocean, but the oceans never rise in level. Their levels are absolutely unchanging because they're already full in a sense of vast and infinite. In the same way, for an enlightened person who knows, I am full, I am vast, I am Satchidananda. For an enlightened person who knows that, tell me, taking some rasagula will make that person more full? Now, not more full in a physical sense. Stomach can be full. Not in that sense. Tell me, if you know you are Satchidananda Atma, will rasagula add to your contentment and peace? A little? Anything? Nothing. Not only that, so if rasagula won't add to your contentment, there's that record-breaking lottery recently. Somebody won $150 million. $150 million. Think about that. You can barely understand $1 million you can sort of get. $150 million after taxes. Makes a difference. All right. Imagine you've discovered your true nature to be Satchidananda Atma, and then you win $150 million lottery. Does it improve your contentment and peace? Wow. This is the vision of the enlightened person. The enlightened person is one who has discovered such inner vastness that even a $150 million couldn't add to it. Conversely, suppose there's a big loss. Looking at the oceans, one thing that you can see the rivers emptying into the ocean. One thing you can't see is water evaporating from the oceans. Vast amounts of water are evaporating from the oceans all the time. Even though we can't see it, it's taking place. And in spite of all that evaporation, the water level doesn't go down. You know, if you leave a cup of water out for several days, have you noticed how the level goes down through evaporation? So in the same way, oceans are evaporating away their water, but the level doesn't go down. So this metaphor can go another step further. Imagine an enlightened person losing a lot of wealth. I don't know if you could lose $150 million. You have to have it first before you can lose it. I can't imagine having it. But imagine losing all your worldly possessions. If you knew this inner vastness, minus all your worldly possessions, is still unchanged in its vastness. Your inner vastness plus $100 million is not increased. Your inner vastness minus all your worldly possessions is not decreased. This is a message of his very beautiful poetic verse. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apaha pravishanti yadvata. Yadvat, just like apaha, the waters, pravishanti, enter into the samudram, into the sea. And apuryamanam, even while they're all dumping their waters into the sea is achala pratishtam. Its level is utterly unchanged. Tadvat, in the same way, kamaha yam pravishanti sarve. Sarve kamaha, all worldly enjoyments. Pravishanti yam, can enter a person who knows his true nature or her true nature, and it doesn't add a thing. Can't add a thing. One who understands this, saha shantim apnoti. Saha, such a person, apnoti, gains shanti. This is true contentment, true peace. A contentment and peace which is achala apratishtam. We can apply that expression. A kind of shanti and peace whose pratishta, whose level is achala. Unchanged, unchanging. Do your moods ever go up and down? Everyone's moods go up and down. But here we're describing the sea doesn't go up and down. Set aside the tides, but the true level of the sea doesn't go up and down. Imagine you discover this inner fullness in such a way that your mood no longer goes up and down. Sashantim apnoti. This person truly gains peace. Na kama kami. But not the person who continues to chase after worldly pleasures. Kama. Chasing after worldly pleasures, you get little moments of happiness followed by moments of feeling miserable. And it will always be like that. So the kama kami, searching through worldly pursuits, will never lead you to lasting fulfillment. But with the help of the teachings of Sri Krishna, you discover that inner vastness, an inner vastness which is utterly affected by anything you gain in life, and inner vastness that is equally unaffected by any loss in life. That's a very beautiful message of his verse. We have just two verses left to conclude our chapter, so we'll conclude chapter 2 in our next class. Some announcements here. Tomorrow, Sunday. By the way, it's the fifth Sunday, so there are no children or teen programs tomorrow, being the fifth Sunday. We will, however, have our satsang at 6 p.m. We're starting each satsang with a brief topic, a topic followed by a Q&A. The topic for tomorrow's satsang is the limits of control of the mind. We try to control our minds, but there are limits to how much we can control. What to do about the limits to the control of one's own mind? That's our initial topic for satsang tomorrow at 6 p.m., followed by question answer. And the last announcement is to remind you one more time about our anniversary coming up on June 2nd and about our souvenir. And I've invited you in past classes to offer some ads or page sponsorships for the souvenir. We're getting some really nice articles for the souvenir. We're not getting enough ads. So I really want to encourage you to place some advertisement or page sponsorship, and that will help us pay for the anniversary celebration. If you have any questions, Lata is here. Lata, stand up. Make sure they can see you. And Lata is taking care of this effort. She can answer any of your questions right after class. Thank you. We'll conclude with our prayers and arati.